All right. Yeah, so I'm Jason Tebow, the executive director of the Streaming Video Alliance. Thanks, you guys. So as we, let me kind of walk you through what we do. This is a little bit of contact information, right? You can reach me at my email address, which is jt@streamingvideoalliance.org, and I'm on Twitter, and there's my phone number. Just a robo call me. A little bit about the SVA. So we are a four-year-old organization. We focus solely on the technical challenges associated with streaming video. We have lots of different working groups, things like privacy and protection, open caching, networking and transport, VR, advertising. So trying to cover sort of the workflow ecosystem of what it means to stream video. And we have kind of three major tenets that we're trying to accomplish in the market. First is education. So we believe it's critical to inform the industry, whether you're a traditional broadcaster, a vMVPD, OTT pure play, what the challenges are in streaming video. So sometimes they're brought to us by our member companies. Sometimes we sort of discover them through analysts, but we bring those to our working groups and we try to develop content, white papers, ebooks, things like that to help to educate the industry about what those challenges are. Number two is collaboration. We provide a forum for everybody to come together. So we actually just published a paper today, a technical paper today, called Forensic Watermarking Implementation Challenges for Streaming Media. And that was put together by a host of industry vendors. So NextGuard was involved, Verimatrix was involved, Irdeto was involved, FriendMTS, Content Armor. They all came together, I mean competitors, sat at the table and developed this document that talks about some of the challenges and associations with implementing forensic watermarking, which I'll cover in this presentation. And then finally, we have definition. So we try to build tech specs, best practices, guidelines that solve those challenges. And you know, here are some of our member companies. So you can see there's lots of big companies on the list. There's Google's and Amazon's and Charter and Comcast and NBC Universal and all these big providers, lots of technology companies, content owners. And so it's really amazing what everybody is coming to do, you know, together in our organization to help build these solutions for a lot of these challenges that all of us are facing in streaming video and providing a better user experience, because that's really what it's about. All right, so let's get on with the topic. Again, this is kind of a foregone conclusion. We know that content is being stolen, right? we know that this is happening. As a matter of fact, I was actually doing some digging today. And I'll share this stat with you in a second, but I want to tell you a little bit of a story. We were talking to a North American operator, big operator, can't say the name. And they were telling us, we were actually talking with their legal team, and they were telling us that about 9% of their broadband subscribers were illegally streaming content. 9%. So if you take like, hey, maybe that's Comcast. Comcast has 30 million subs, 9% of 30 million. Holy smokes, is that a lot of lost revenue? And so it was a very interesting story, you know, to hear them say that, and they didn't have a solution for it. So we were talking to their legal team, and the only answer they had was to send cease and desist or takedown notices. And I'll talk about this in a second, but if you're in, like, Belarus or Poland, they're not going to pay much attention to a takedown notice from a North American operator. So this is a major problem. The stat that I found today, there was actually a research study published in 2016, and I can't remember off the top of my head who did it, but this is what they projected based on current losses, was by 2020, stream piracy would account for $50 billion in lost revenue. That's insane, right? So we know this is a problem. We know every broadcaster, every OTT provider, everybody in the industry faces this issue, and we've got to figure out a way to stop it. So what makes it so easy to do that today? So like, why is streaming so prevalent? Well, part of it is because it's stupid easy to do in two ways, right? First is the streamer, right? You used to have to be a hacker. You used to have to be this like crazy creepy guy in a basement with a Coke and raw meat in order to set up this streaming service to steal other people's content. But you don't have to do that anymore. I mean, you've got AWS now. You can turn up a streaming service in like 30 seconds. So it's so easy to set up these services and your own infrastructure. You know, there's bare metal hosters all over the world. You can set up your boxes, it's no problem. And then on the consumer side, you used to have to be a geek, right? You used to have to know where the BitTorrents were, how to download the BitTorrent player, go get the torrents. You don't have to do that anymore. Now you can get a Kodi box, plug it in, or use popcorn, and you've got free content. It's crazy. It is so stupid easy to steal content today. And that's a problem. So the question becomes is, how do we stop it, right? As a collective, as an industry, how do we put our hand down and say, nope, we got to stop this from happening. We need to protect our revenue, protect our user experiences, make sure our viewers are happy, everyone's safe and sound. And the issue is, we're only left with this one solution right now. And mind you, I'm going to go into a lot of the technology in a second. But really, this is where we're at, right? We, for VOD, it's easy. We have DRM. It's okay. You know, here's the devil's advocate, right? So DRM is really cool. How many people in here are content distributors? How many people are content owners? So a few ones. Okay, so we know about DRM, right? We can encrypt our content. What stops somebody from encrypting the content? So I'm going to buy it once. I'm going to play it on my computer. I'm going to set a camera up in front of it. I'm going to record it, and then I'm going to send that illegally out everywhere. DRM? Oh well. And I'll tell you, I have a piece of software on my computer that strips off Apple's FairPlay for iTunes content. And what does it do? It re-records the output. No, it's great for me because I want to put my movies on Plex, but it's like, DRM? So this is the problem, is the technology is not foolproof. So they're left with just this legal recourse, and like I said before, no one really pays a whole lot of attention outside of the US. Yeah, if you're in Poland, you're not paying attention to a North American operator. So the thing that I want to get to is that the security strategy that you employ has to be layered. It can't just be one technology. It's got to be multiple things that you combine together, and there's a trade-off for that, right? When we do that, right, we're also protecting our viewers. So one of the things, I was talking to a guy at Akamai, and one of the things he told me was that the pirate attack vectors are changing. So it's not just about stealing content anymore, it's about infecting users with malware. So now you have do you have a responsibility as a distributor or an owner to sort of protect your potential viewers? So we're kind of in this crazy scenario. It's very dystopian, where we are suddenly obligated to do so much more than just deliver streaming content. So this is the one thing that we don't talk about a lot, though, is when we implement all of this technology, so watermarking, DRM, HTTPS, other things, the elephant in the room is all about the viewer experience. It's about latency. So what happens when we're streaming live content and we're trying to protect it, and it adds 5 seconds of latency? Oh my gosh, right? The user gets pissed off, it's 5 seconds longer behind live already, so you've got a major user experience problem. Obviously, we don't want our streaming to slow down. We want it to speed up. We want it to be as close to broadcast as possible. But we have to manage the risk versus the reward. So how much technology can we implement and still get the reward of protecting our content without sacrificing anything against the viewer experience? So how do we do this? What are the options, right? You take the blue pill or the red pill? Anybody get the?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure. I was very happy about this slide. I've broken sort of what you can do down into 3 buckets. This concept of observation, identification, and prevention. So the first thing that you need to do is you need to figure out, are you being attacked? Are you being hacked? Are you being pirated? And who's doing it? So obviously, if you have content, you're being pirated. Let's just get that out of the way again. People are stealing your content. There's no doubt about it. The question is can you mitigate the amount of pirating that's happening? So, I mean, Perry in the last presentation brought up, the hackers will get around any technology you put in place. Have you ever heard that thing? You know, I can secure my house as much as possible, but if a thief wants to get in, they'll figure a way in. Same thing with content piracy. They'll figure out a way to steal the content. So the idea is to just sort of plumb that leak. If I can get to a drip and I'm losing 1% of revenue versus 50%, that's a huge improvement. So the idea behind this first thing, kind of observation, is figuring out who's attacking me? Where are they coming from? What can I do about that? Right? Can I identify IP addresses, device types? Can I black hole them? Can I keep rotating that sort of approach and figuring out how to stop the pirates? Yeah, right? And the way we do that is through log data. So we're collecting tons of data about streaming. And actually, this example came from one of our member companies, Bantech Media, which is now Disney. So I talked to a gentleman there, and this is what they do, right? They look at log files and all the data that they have collected, and they try to figure out who is approaching their content most often. Like, is it coming from lots of different accounts? Is one account making tens of thousands of extra requests? Has that account been hacked? Has that account been compromised? Or is it the subscriber? The problem is it's a really manual process right now, right? So it's not scalable. And it's not very effective if there were thousands of pirates, right? So it's great if you had a dozen pirates or five or six of them. But when you're talking about hundreds of people stealing content, then it's a big issue, right? So one of the cool things that's happening is artificial intelligence and machine learning is starting to get applied to this problem, right? So you start using models to look through the data to figure out the patterns. And then from there, you can identify those IP addresses, those devices, the locations in the world, the geographies, and you can do something about stopping those requests from coming in and letting the good ones through. All right, so the next one, identification. So you know who's doing it now. So now the question is, you've got to really pinpoint it. You've got to get down to brass tacks and say, okay, I know hackers are coming from these six regions in the world. Now I've got to know who they are, and I've got to stop them specifically. And the best way to do that, I'll be honest, is, to Nagar's point, is forensic watermarking, right? It's being able to identify who owns the content, who purchased the content, and who's viewing the content. So that's really where watermarking comes into play. And this is the doc that I mentioned earlier that we just published. I apologize, I'm losing my breath. So what is forensic watermarking? Well, obviously, it's a digital fingerprint, right? It's a way to identify the owner and the chain of custody for a piece of content. And it's not every piece of content, so you don't watermark everything in your library. You identify those content elements that are important enough to watermark, and you protect those, right? And so it's kind of like asking yourself, do I need to protect every piece of home and gardening content on HGTV, or just a few of the episodes? So you make that decision about each episode, and you choose to watermark what's important. Now again, so what this establishes is a chain of custody. So you know when you watermark something, you know who the owner of that content is, you know who purchased it or subscribed to it, and you know who viewed it, right? Now, so the watermark itself doesn't do that. It's the forensic part after it that does it. But there's some great use cases for forensic watermarking. So digital cinema's been using it for about 15 years. And that's the person sitting in the audience with their phone, physically videoing the movie, right? So this is a way to stop that. You have screeners, so people who get advanced copies of very, very high quality content, expensive content, prior to, say, Academy Award nominations. You've got physical media, so Blu-ray DVDs, right? It's a way to protect those. Premium VOD, very similar to the screeners, right? Just at a larger scale. And then on the live side, right? So live is becoming more popular. And the issue with that is it's really difficult to do stuff on the fly. So it's trying to figure out, what exactly do I need to watermark it? So this is kind of the way that watermarking works. And when I saw Harry's presentation, I was like, oh no, he's going to steal all my thunder. this is actually from one of our member companies, Content Armor, but it's fairly similar to the way that all watermarking works, right? The watermark is inserted, pre-processing. There's an element of survivability, which I'll talk about in a second. The watermark content is then delivered. When that content shows up out on the web, on a pirate site or something like that, the issue then becomes, catching that content and then decompiling the watermark to determine in a forensic database all of the data associated with the ID, right? So who bought that content? Where was it watched? Where did it come from originally, et cetera, et cetera. And there's different kinds of watermarking. So in our document, we talk about what's called one-step and two-step watermarking. So this is an example of one-step where the content is embedded once, usually with the uncompressed video. So it's you have to have access to the source content where the watermark is placed, and then all the transcoding happens after that. And then there's two-step watermarking, which I'm not technical enough to get into. But really, two-step watermarking is about variance. And it's about, you know, creating different variations of the content when it comes to chunk sizes. And then all that content is compared against masters and all this stuff. But again, it's all about the fact that there are options with regard to watermarking. So I mentioned this word before. The key here is about the fact that the watermark survives content transformation. So what does a pirate do when he gets a piece of content? He transcodes it, right? Hey, maybe I can get the watermark out of it. The really good watermarks survive that kind of processing. And that's the whole point, so that we can't have the watermark disappear. It needs to move from version of content to version of content. All right, the last part, prevention. And I'm kind of rushing through this a little bit. I'm trying to get you guys back on track time-wise. I got stuff in the back. All right, so obviously, watermarking does not prevent piracy. I can still steal it and distribute it, right? It doesn't stop me from doing so. Encrypted content kind of does, right? So again, back to DRM. If I encrypt my content with a DRM protection scheme, at least it kind of prevents people from stealing it. Obviously, what I want to do is I want to just not only protect the content, but I want to protect the pipe as well. So I use HTTPS when I stream. So I'm encrypting the data flow between server and player so there's no intercept. Content gets to the player, it's encrypted by DRM, has to get decrypted at the player. So there's lots of ways that I can prevent piracy, but I can't truly. Right, not with one solution. So watermarking does a great job of identifying who's stolen a piece of content. DRM does a great job of encrypting a piece of content, but there's, you know, still this issue of how do I stop piracy? So obviously, you know, I'm gonna really propose that it's all about layers. So if you have layers of technology, so if you've got watermarking working in conjunction with DRM, think about that scenario I painted at the beginning, right? Where you have DRM content and somebody's filming it with a camera. Well, if it's also watermarked, I can now identify the person who bought my DRM's content and I can go after them. So there's more than just one thing you need to implement, right? That's the true strategy, the content protection strategy that all OTT providers need to adhere to, is this sort of multiple layers. Now, there's lots of other things you can do to prevent content theft. So again, this was a conversation with one of our member companies about some of the things they do. And so there are things like CDN edge tokens, right? Which has become kind of the strategy du jour for distribution, right? To use tokens at the edge to make sure that each content session is unique. There's identifiers in the URI. So the idea there being is that you have an audit trail. You can time bound access for your URLs. So you can say this event's only going to be available for 30 minutes. So you're limiting the window for piracy. Obviously encrypted content. So again, there's lots of different things that operation people can do to prevent stream theft in conjunction with implementable technologies. Now, if you've gotten anything from me and from Harry really as well, is that this is a complicated problem. Right, this is not something that you sit down and solve, you know, today. Like, hey, board, let's get together, I got the solution. Not the case. This is all about figuring out how the technologies apply to your workflow and your business model, and then prioritizing and stacking and integrating. And it's kind of a, you know, long-term thing. It's not you're gonna solve it overnight. You know, again, so I just want to remind you about this sort of three-pronged thing, right? Observation, identification, prevention. This is the way you need to approach content protection, because it will provide you the opportunity to see, you know, who's in my data, who do I see that's doing, you know, strange things with requests for content,
you've got a way to identify them, you know, physically, like with a watermark, and then you can prevent them from ever stealing content in the first place. Again, not to take piracy off the table, but just to reduce it to a trickle, a manageable trickle. And that's all I got. All right, before clapping, are there any questions about that? I mean, I kind of ran through that pretty quickly to get everybody back on track time-wise, but any thoughts on sort of that approach, sort of observation, identification, prevention? Anybody in here doing anything totally crazy with security?
I can't explain it, but yes.
Hold on.
It's actually the opposite. It's
switch on.
Client choosing to
switch on.
It's more the agony of dealing with a client who has chosen that most of his stuff isn't worth it. That they're more than willing to accept the amount of piracy that they will get, and so they will be very, very limited in what they do. I occasionally scream and bang my head against the wall for a while, and then we can have a conversation again.
It's your job to teach clients not to be stupid with their content.
I wish.
Any other questions or thoughts or comments?
As the alliance, what's your communication with the studios, with the content owners, educating them, discussing about best practices and all that?
Sure. So our job, again, as educators, is to work with all of those constituents. So we have a liaison agreement, for example, with Movie Labs. So we reference their document in our document. We reference UHD's watermarking document in our document. We have a lot of content owners as members, like Viacom, Fox, and Disney, and so it's an NBC Universal. So we have contributions from them into the document, into the process. Now comes a sort of, marketing campaign, right? Once the document's been published, it's kind of my job to run out to the industry and get it in front of as many people as possible so that they start to understand, oh, hey, that's really helpful. I should go back to the SBA for more info.
So I have a client in the past who was
a
basically applied not as many layers as you described, but basic ones, and then his only request was, tell me who's pirating my content, and I want exact information on who that person is. What that person did is reached out to them and said, hey, you're watching a very bad quality product. You must have invested something in somebody to access it. I'm gonna make it cheaper for you. Will that work for you? So I think the way he approached the problem was, he says, there is a fan following saying Poland for my product. Can I make it affordable for Poland? So rather than investing that dollar in securing and building high guards, he basically said, the reason you're watching shitty quality is because probably that's the only way, or I have rights issue, but let me work on that. So I really feel that I see security companies racking in $1 billion and getting listed and whatnot, but I always wonder, is there any data and analytics around a user who tried to access the NFL realizes it's behind a very expensive paywall, and then how much percentage of those users actually said, oh wow, it's so well protected, let me pay that $100 and get into it? And second, did anybody ever put in an effort on figuring out how can I make it lower quality but affordable? Like, I feel that industry kind of misses these two aspects. It's all about guarding it and making the walls higher, and just tons of research and development into it.
Oh, it's very interesting. I don't think anyone's done any research on that. I mean, that would be, that's a great strategy. So you kind of turn the pirates against themselves. Like, hey, you're getting that lousy content from him. I'll give it to you cheaper than you're paying for him, and I'll give you better quality. And now I have a new subscriber that I can market to later. Oh, fantastic.
Maybe this actually happens, but in, I would say, in very specific markets, right? Just look at China. I think there's the studios, but also on the sports side, there's many of them that look at, hey, I can choose either I get this pirated or I make a special offer, I have special conditions, but because the market is very segregated, right?
Yep.
But that's more difficult in a market like US, where if you give it for free, or let's say for 10% to one subscriber, then are you still going to get 100% from the other?
Well,
Well, in markets like India, even in Asia, there are companies who actually go and say, here is a super low quality SD version for free. In return, we'll show you tons of ads. But you pay us, and we'll give you a very high quality product.
Yes.
All the research does not go in clarity with it anymore. Right?
Yeah. No, but that's a, That's why India is probably the same as China.
So what I understood is that basically it's all about deterrence and provenance, right? There is no real protection. So for example, even DRM, I can just get the data from memory while it is being decrypted, or I can shoot from camcorder, right? So is this the, so it's all about the what kind of appetite company has on the content loss, right?
That's really what it comes down to. I mean, I hate to say it. I mean, with, you know, the fact that we have security vendors as part of our membership, you know, this is a cat and mouse game, right? You're going to stop the pirate on one place, and the pirate's going to run around and figure out another way to get around it, and you're going to stop him there, and it's just, it's endless. So, you know, I think as an industry, we have to figure out, what do we do about piracy? How do we combat it at the root, rather than being reactive, being proactive? So it's a really great point. I mean, you know, I can just, I thought about that scenario with the DRM earlier today, and I was like, wow, I never thought about that. And we did a webinar today with Verimatrix and NextGuard and Irdeto and another company, Edgeware, about security for online content, and they pretty much said the same thing. They're like, yeah, you know, people are going to steal the content, they're going to steal the content. All right, any other questions? No? Well, fantastic. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Okay.